Today marks the end of 9 years of U.S. combat operations in Afghanistan. It was just under 4 weeks after the 9/11 attacks that President Bush ordered our troops into Afghanistan. The idea was to go after Al-Qaeda training camps there and to go after the Taliban, the religious extremists in that country who had allowed Al-Qaeda under Osama bin Laden to operate in that country. By the end of 2001, we had crushed the Taliban. The same way you crush cockroaches. We kept the light on for 2 months, and they ran. The problem was, we turned the light off, and the cockroaches came back out. And the Taliban has been on the rise in Afghanistan ever since, even with the latest U.S. military pushes in that country, which unfortunately have led to this being the deadliest year for U.S. and coalition forces since we started this thing with them 9 years ago. So on the eve of beginning our 10th year of combat operations, war, in Afghanistan, we get a report today from the Washington Post that Afghan President Hamid Karzai has been having secret talks with representatives of the Taliban to negotiate an end to the war. Here to help me analyze all of this is Jerry Van Dyke, the CBS News reporter who has spent a lot of time over the years in Afghanistan, going back way before the U.S. invaded. In fact, back to the days shortly after the Soviet Union was still a part of Afghani life. I talked to Jerry on this radio station 3 months ago when he published a book about the 45 days he was held captive by the Taliban, a book simply entitled Captive. Jerry, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Paul. It's good to talk to you, and it's good to hear your introduction there.
Well, I appreciate your time. Give me your take on this Washington Post report about Karzai and his Afghani government talking to the Taliban and negotiating with them.
First inclination we had of this, the first news we had, came from General Petraeus about a week ago when he announced that senior Taliban leaders had approached President Karzai, that it did not come from the Karzai government, that it came from the Taliban, and that negotiations were going on. Now, we have had negotiations going on for at least 2 years. The most serious ones, most recent ones, were held in the Maldives, islands in the Indian Ocean, again where Saudi Arabia was in charge, and these took place in May. Both sides disavowed them, said no, they are not going on, but there are too many news reports stating that they, in fact, were going on. The latest report in the Washington Post report to which you just referred, again, is being controlled, being run by Saudi Arabians, but the Washington Post article also said that a senior Saudi official denied it. So what is probably going on is that, unfortunately, with now 150,000 foreign troops in Afghanistan, 30,000 additional troops have now arrived, a surge. We have 47 nations allied with the United States in Afghanistan. It's not succeeding. The Taliban are on the rise. I talked to the NATO spokesman who was here in New York. He was at the Pentagon, and then he came up accompanying different officials with NATO who gave an address at the Council on Foreign Relations, and he said to me that journalists and NGO workers are not traveling outside of Kabul anymore. It is far too dangerous. The Taliban are everywhere. The Taliban are not negotiating from a position of weakness. What is really going on? It's hard to know the truth because you and I are on the outside. We're not involved in the government. We don't know. But what we have is the very simple fact that Pakistan does control the Taliban. There's no question about that. Pakistan needs the United States. We've supplied them with $12 billion in aid since this war began. The United States is looking for a way out of Afghanistan. How can we extricate ourselves from this seemingly endless war? The Soviet Union was there for 10 years. We've been there for 9. America's closest ally, to which you referred in your introduction, which I thought was excellent, is the Northern Alliance. The Northern Alliance is 100% opposed to any type of negotiation whatsoever with this arch enemy, the Taliban. That's why they were fighting them for 10 years. Also, the Taliban have said that we will never negotiate from a position, one of weakness, and that we want all foreign troops to leave Afghanistan. Well, The United States is not simply going to cut tail and run. This is far too early. It's very early stages of very possible negotiations, but I would not discount them. Finally, President Karzai doesn't know what the United States' intentions are. They feel, there are many reports, he feels that the United States is going in a different direction, that it will ultimately pull out. He is afraid not just of his government, but of his life. The Taliban murdered his father.
So, Jerry, it sounds to me like the Taliban wants complete control, and if they are negotiating from a position of power, and you've got the Karzai government, which is not only battling against the Taliban, but is also battling against corruption within its own ranks, is there a chance for the Taliban to lose, or are they going to take over Afghanistan again?
What I think, if the worst thing that could happen is, and I don't believe that this will happen, is if the United States, for political reasons, for domestic political considerations, that the American public refuses to support this war anymore, that the Congress refuses to supply funds, starts to pull out, we're going to have not just the Taliban take over, we're going to have a civil war. And that civil war is going to be between the Northern Alliance in the north and the Taliban headquartered in the tribal areas of Pakistan and in Quetta, which is the major city in a Pakistani province of Balochistan, which is south of Afghanistan. And also you have to stop right there. According to the Washington Post article, and I believe this firmly, is that there's only one element of the Taliban that has approached the United States about negotiating. It's the Quetta Shura. Shura means council. The Quetta Council, led by Mullah Omar, head of the Taliban in the south. It does not include the Haqqani group, which is General Petraeus and General McChrystal before him will tell you, and the people that, one of their subgroups were the ones that captured or kidnapped me. They are not, they're the most lethal, the most brutal of the Taliban insurgents now fighting along the Afghan-Pakistani border. They're not a part of these negotiations. Either are Hekmatyar in the north. However, both of these groups have allies in the, what we'll call the what's called the Afghan parliament, Wolsey Jirga, which means people's parliament. It's comparable to our House of Representatives. They have allies there. The United States, unfortunately, is in a tremendous bind. To a degree, we're flying blind in Afghanistan. We can't control it. We don't know. There are reports just coming out that while we're in Kandahar, who's a friend and who's a foe? You made a very interesting point in your introduction. It was excellent when you said that we turned the lights off and the cockroaches went away. It's not just that they took off their black turbans and went back to farming. Who's the Taliban? Who's on our side? It's so hard to know. The United States is in a very difficult situation. The war is not going well. We're trying to extricate ourselves. Pakistan will be behind the Taliban. It's not just that the Taliban will come to power. It's Pakistan, one of the three nations, the other being Saudi Arabia and the other United Arab Emirates, who gave diplomatic recognition to the Taliban. If the Taliban comes to power, Pakistan will be behind it because they want to control Afghanistan because they do not want to be surrounded there by India, its arch enemy.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Jerry Van Dyke about the almost ninth anniversary of our war in Afghanistan. Tomorrow will mark the beginning of our 10th year there. As I mentioned in the opening, Jerry, we went in there after 9/11 because the Taliban was harboring and perhaps even encouraging Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda with their terrorist training camps there. The idea was, let's go in there because that's the enemy that attacked us. Well, here we are 9 years later, and the people who harbored that enemy are not only on the rise, but perhaps on the cusp of taking the country over yet again. What does that mean for Homeland Security?
To answer that indirectly as well as directly, what we had was, what was it, less than a week ago, Osama bin Laden yet again announced his presence with another, in this case, internet tape. Before he used to, at the very beginning, as we all know, these tapes were video. They were sent to Al Jazeera, the television network in the Middle East, and disseminated it throughout the world. Then they came out on radio. Now they're coming out on the internet. There's no way in the world that anybody knows where he is, apparently, because where this internet feed coming from. The United States under President Obama has ratcheted it up considerably from what President Bush had started, and that is these drone attacks on the Taliban leadership and its allies in the tribal areas of Pakistan. But they still have no way of knowing where Osama bin Laden is. So your point is, what does this do for Homeland Security? We have this past week, haven't we, all these reports coming out of a pending terrible terrorist attack from Stockholm to Paris. We heard these reports that somewhere in Europe they're going to launch them. These come from the tribal areas of Pakistan. This is where the Taliban are headquartered. But the Taliban, I'm getting to your question about Homeland Security. When they had me and I was in that prison, and I was trying to stay alive, they told me that they would kill every single American soldier that came to their area. They never once, however, talked about coming here to attack us. Mm-hmm. This is beyond their ken. Their interest is Afghanistan and Pakistan. Al-Qaeda is different. Al-Qaeda has an international agenda. Therefore, if, yes, the Taliban were to come back to Afghanistan and come to power, absolutely, in my view, would elements of Al-Qaeda, because we haven't cut off the leadership, the two top heads, bin Laden or al-Zawahiri, they're still out there, would very possibly come back. I cannot imagine that the President of the United States or equally, if not more so in this case, using Bob Woodward's recent book showing that the United States military, the generals, would countenance something like that. I don't believe the United States in any way is going to leave. We have three air bases, one in Kandahar, one in Shindan, which is built initially by the Soviet Union, which is on the Iranian border, and one in Mazar Sharif in the north, which would be close to Russia. The United States is building these air bases up. I don't think we're going to leave anytime soon.
All right, Jerry, that's great analysis. Now, here's the last thing I want to ask you about today. 2 or 3 weeks ago on 60 Minutes, Laura Logan aired a piece where she was embedded with some of our troops who are right there on the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, some of the harshest fighting that's going on every day. There are mortar attacks. They go out on patrols to try to make friends with neighbors in the villages, and some days it goes well, and some days it goes very, very not well. And I kept thinking as I was watching this, why? Why are they fighting for all of these empty square miles of hellish terrain? What is the goal here? And then I thought, the next thing I thought was, I wonder if this same thought goes through the minds of those troops. Number one is stay alive. But number two, they've got to be asking themselves, why? Can you answer the question why they're out there fighting for that?
I think if you and I were to ask them, ask those young men and to a degree the women who would be there, most of whom, let's say, are in their early 20s, some, of course, older, their senior officers could be up in their 30s and their 40s, they're fighting for one another. They're fighting for, deep down, they're fighting for their lives and for the camaraderie that they have. It was the same in Vietnam. But beyond that, they all joined the American military because they wanted to try and, I think, pay back a bit for 9/11, and they wanted to try and prevent what you're talking about in attacks on the United States. I do think that there's a deep patriotism in there. Unfortunately, what has happened is that, and you brought this up in your introduction or in one of your statements here, what began as a war against Al-Qaeda under President Bush has morphed into a huge war against the Taliban, to the point now where, when they're out in these small villages, the villagers, and I've been in so many of these villages, they do not distinguish among Russians in the past or Americans today or Swedes or French or Germans who are there. They're all outsiders. And so it can be some of these cases, which is one reason why under General McChrystal we began to pull back from some of these very, very isolated areas, because what we were doing was simply getting involved in fighting against men who do not want people from the outside into their area. So why are we along these borders? Why are we out there in these middle of these, as you put, these godforsaken areas? I am not sure why we're there anymore, except that we have 150,000 troops in Afghanistan. General Petraeus said we need 30,000 more. He wanted more than that, apparently, according to Bob Woodward. He wanted 40,000. He got 30,000. They're trying to find a way to rid these areas of the Taliban, to hold these areas, and then to transfer them to the Afghan National Army so that the United States can pull out. Will this happen? In my view, never.
CBS Newsman Jerry Van Dyke, whose book is an unbelievably compelling read. It's called Captive, My Time as a Prisoner of the Taliban. We had an extensive talk about it 3 months ago on this radio station. If you missed it, you can catch the podcast of it on my website, harrisonline.com. And I appreciate your analysis, Jerry. You know more about that area than most other American reporters, and it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you. Jerry Van Dyke here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.